Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study. I'm very pleased to have with me today on Research Matters three guests, Mike Rosner and Charles Zarbella from the Department of Intelligent Computer Systems here at the University, and also Dr. Siegfried Hanschur. Just a few words about Dr. Hanschur. He is Senior Research Fellow at the Digital Enterprise Research Institute in Galway and the National University of Ireland in Galway, and is at present on a visit to Malta at the invitation of the Faculty of Information and Communication Technology here at the University. His current research interests include annotations in the semantic web, knowledge acquisition, and social semantic desktops. He was leading the DERI work at the Nepomuk project. More about that later, and I'll try and explain the acronym when we get there. Previously, he worked at the Centre for Computer Science at the University of Karlsruhe and worked on the Halo 2 project and the Onto Agents project. He was also involved in a number of EU-funded projects such as .com and Ace Media, and he has chaired several workshops on semantic annotation and is co-editor of the book Annotation for the Semantic Web. Welcome, Dr. Hanschur, Mike Rosner and Charles Zarbella. I think that that rather terrifying acronym, Nepomuk, is rather difficult to define. The Networked Environment for Personalized Ontology-Based Management of Unified Knowledge. I think I did read the definitions, but I'm not quite sure what it was all about. So I hope that you're going to, the three of you, especially Dr. Hanschur, you're going to enlighten us as we go along. However, in the brief bio that I've just read, there's this this word semantic web. And perhaps before going into any detail about the projects, perhaps you could explain, because sometimes there are these words that are sort of part of the nomenclature of these areas of study. And you will know very clearly in your mind, you have a very clear idea of what semantic web really means. But perhaps the listeners would benefit if you explained exactly where what it really was referring to.
Yes, so I will try, my colleagues can help me to have explanation for the layman. So the semantic web aims to be an evolvement of the current World Wide Web, which we have. It was envisioned by Tim Berners-Lee, who also invented the World Wide Web. So when you look at the current web, we have a lot of web pages which are linked together, right? So we have web pages and we have hyperlinks. And these web pages are kind of machine readable, so a machine can read it and present it in form of a web page to human person. But these web pages are not computer understandable. So if you want to have an automatic processing of information, that's not really easily possible on one hand. And on the other hand, these links, they don't have a meaning. So if I have a link from one page to another page, it just say this information has to do something with that. But it doesn't tell you what it has to do. In order to know what this link has to do, you as a human have to read the website and the other one and kind of infer what it might mean. And the semantic web had the idea to give it more meaning, what is on the web. So, for example, to have links, which means that this link could mean that one person collaborates with another person, or this link could mean that the one person lives in that city, which might be the other web page, which might be about a city. So this link should have a meaning, and the data should not only be understandable by humans, but to some extent, and as far as it's possible for computers, be possessable by computers. And for this, we invented several frameworks or tricks, how you want to call it, in order to make it possible. One is to put metadata into the web page, or to put metadata as such into the web, which is machine understandable. And the other is to ground this metadata in what we call ontologies. So an ontology is a formal description of how this information is supposed to be interpreted. So to give you an example, when we talk about things like we talk about that this is a table, we share this common concept about what a table is, and general concept would be that a table has four legs, and I think this is a table that has more than four legs, and we still consider it being a table. So there's a kind of formal kind of agreement between us what constitutes a table. And if you translate it into the computer world, this formal agreement, what constitutes a table, is that what we call an ontology, so formal specific description. What features must a thing have that we see it as a table? Mm-hmm. Right? And this allows us actually to communicate, to exchange information about tables or about other things which we have an agreement on, a general concept. That's what we do in mathematics.
It's an interesting concept, this, the idea of the computer's great abilities compared to the human's great abilities. They're sort of, they're different abilities, and somehow you have to get them together. I mean, Mike, we've spoken on this program before about this, looking at the computer in a humanized way, and trying to realize that the computer cannot understand things in the way that we do, because it cannot, as you were saying, make inferences.
Right. I think the semantic web is an attempt to get computers to be able to make inferences on the basis of web pages. I mean, as Ziggy was saying just now, a web page, an ordinary web page, is just something which is displayed. And all the computer knows is, you know, I will put this as a heading, I will put these things as bullet points, and so on. I will make the background green. That's all it knows. It knows nothing about what the subject matter is. And the semantic web idea is to try and include within the web page the ability to understand, to include information about the concepts which are being expressed on the web page. So he Ziggy mentioned the idea of somebody where somebody lives. So you've got a person, and this is a web page about a person. It's already more than just knowing that it's got bullet points in certain places. It's about a person. Therefore, you expect to find certain information about that person. What information do you find about people? Well, you know about that because you've got to know about the content of a person. A person's got an age. A person's got a residence, a place where they live. So in your ontology, you state these things. And that kind of information is then used when I'm now asking the computer, where does this person live? You go to their web page, and now, because you have this meta-knowledge about the concept being expressed about this person, you expect to find a link to that person's address. And that's expressed at a higher level, if you see what I mean. And this is the idea of making an inference. Now the computer is able to understand that by looking at the web page of the person, they will also find they will find a link to where they live. And they will also know that link will be a place. It will not be a person, it will be a place. And the idea is to try and make explicit, this is just an example with people and their addresses, but the other facets of our knowledge, to try and make it explicit so that the computer can actually reason about not just the way a page looks, but what it actually means.
It's a huge amount of information, isn't it? Because you're having to profile everything that we would normally, so we look at a person and we immediately recognize the silhouette of a person. We immediately make things because we've got a history, because we can recognize certain things which are to have become the norm.
Yes. But what is important to note is that, as opposed to traditional AI, who want kind of model the world knowledge, that's not really what the semantic web is about. It's more about, and that's interesting in the definition of ontologies, an ontology always requires a so-called ontogroup. So a group of people who commit themselves using this ontology for the exchange of information, which has some interesting philosophical side notes, as they only have to model the part of which is important for them for the knowledge exchange. So if, for example, you would talk about Eskimos, is that the right English word? They have, it said, I don't know if it's true, 500 words for snow. So their ontology about snow or weather might be much, much more complex and richer than whatever ontology we would build about that. But both ontologies would be valid. It's not like we have one truth, and that's the only thing we have to refer to, or we want to express anything which has to do with snow, but only the important parts, which is important for whatever system or application I want to build, or whatever intelligent search I want to do with the computer. And all ontologies have the inherent notion of mapping between ontologies. So we said we have no universal truth, so that's acknowledged, but we have certain groups who have this view of the world or this view of the world. And when we have these different views of the world, it's important to know how we can get from one point of view in the world to the other one. So you could translate the knowledge of Eskimos to snow, to our representation of snow, but we might probably use different more attributes for that, because they might have one word and we have to say, well, this special snow that we're referring to, that's the very wet snow, which is kind of grayish thingy, and we have to explain it more complex, but it would contain the same information.
One of the things that fascinates me about these projects, and we mentioned several in the bio that we were talking about just now, is this idea of the contribution of the various partners in the group. And I went on the website just to have a look at the Nepawuk structure, and there were lots of partners, in actual fact, lots of partners, and there were various, even commercial people involved, companies involved. How did you go about organizing the project? How did it come together?
Oh, that's a difficult question.
Did you order something different?
How it came together, I actually have to pass on that, because I started when the project started, so it was consortium was already there. But how could we manage the project? That's what you ask. Mm. Well, we had a lot of meetings and telephone conferences. Actually, we had a weekly telephone conference, which helped us a lot to establish our ontology for the group, because when you have researchers from different directions, we had people dealing with human-computer interaction, we had linguists in there, we had the semantic web people, we had people from Institut Pasteur there, and they also have, everybody has his own view, even on the project, how it should be done. And then you need a lot of discussion until you get the commitment project was about the semantic desktop. So what is a semantic desktop and what is important in that? So what requirements do we have for that? And how should we tackle it from a technological point of view? So it needs a lot of discussion in the beginning until we create our common vocabulary in the project, and this we then can use to work on. It's kind of similar to creating an ontology.
And in fact, you would have needed not just technical computer people, you would also have perhaps needed philosophers, or did you use other disciplines at all?
Well, the project was about infrastructure, so we're technologically driven, but I have to admit that there was a kind of, took a while until the people who are looking only about how to build a user interface, who don't really care how it's done about technically, just want that it looks nice, there was a kind of culture clash between the pure technicians who just to care how it was done and that it has all these features and functions. And this took a while in the project until these two could get together somehow.
Not everyone interested in the aesthetics of it. But
Right, so I want that it works. I care later about aesthetics. That would be the computer sciences point of view. Uh-huh. Don't bother me with users.
But on the other hand, it is the users at the end of the day who are going to benefit from your research. So what was your relationship then with the users? Did you try things out on them, or didn't you need to do that?
One, of course, a bit extra-aggravation, is the right word? To clash between the cultures. So we, of course, understood, and we had to learn from them, and we did evaluations of the tools in the end. I mean, first we had to build a technical background, and as the infrastructure was there, we did evaluation of the user playing with the system and do this kind of interviews, what is his opinion about that and what we should change and if he understands the concepts we were introducing there.
What were the actual benefits at the end of the day of the results that came out of this project for people. Perhaps there were benefits at the user end, perhaps there were benefits at the more technical end. I mean, what were the benefits for everybody?
Well, before I start with benefit, probably I should talk about the particular problem we tackled, right? So we talked about the semantic web, and this project was about something we called a semantic desktop, which was more the idea that what we built for the web and that computer can understand web pages and interpret them, that we want to have also in our everyday life when we do office work, so when I work with my email client or with my file and folder system. And there's a particular problem when you work with your computer, that you have on one hand the problem of information overload. You have to deal with more and more emails, with more and more files every day. And there's the other problem of you have data silos there. So basically, if I get an email from Charlie, and I have also a research paper on my file system from Charlie, I cannot tell my machine that actually this stuff belongs together, because it simply doesn't work. My email client doesn't care about my files. So even if there is this information, I'm not able to link it, which is also the semantic web is about linking information and telling what it means. And that's why we introduced into the desktop system or into the workspace this semantic technology, in order to allow all kinds of information integration, so that I can connect this information, do all kinds of annotations, and also do reasoning on top of that. So this was the problem of data silos, and what is the benefit for the user? Well, the benefit on one hand is that he can express these things, so actually should be able to improve his personal information management. And also that since he has a little bit more intelligent now on his machine, because the machine understands to some extent information, the computer can help him to filter out unimportant information. As this is not important for you, because for this and this reason. On the other hand, he can provide you with additional information you might need in order to do a certain task or to get some additional information about a person. So let's assume you know Skype and you will get a voice over IP call. And even before you answer that call, the machine could actually tell you background information about the person. So when you last time you met him, what is your social relationship with him, what kind of documents you get from that person, what kind of emails you are sending him. And you will be well prepared even before you answer the phone. And that's useful information a computer can give you, because he's able to integrate all the information you have on the desktop and on the web in a useful way. So that benefit
that sounds
is that.
Interesting, yeah.
So actually, the impact should be that it helps you to save time.
Yeah. I mean, I must say that I noticed that.
But it's a research project, not a product, so we have not solved our problems.
Just in my kind of everyday management of things, I start off the day sometimes I start the computer from scratch, so there's nothing on the screen. Mm. By the end of the day, it's completely filled with absolutely everything, and I don't dare. Stop anything, because I know I'm going to come back to it later, and of course I don't always do that.
Right.
But it just means that at the end of the day, it's a big mess.
Right.
And I think that anything that's going to help with that problem of keeping the stuff that's relevant up front,
yeah,
is going to be very, very useful. Particularly when you consider the number of different dimensions that you employ in your daily work. So Ziggy mentioned the research papers and the people, but there's also the other people, and there's also the diary and the other constraints that you've got. There's also the lectures that you've got, and all these other things are happening all at once. It is very difficult to keep track of everything, and I believe that this approach of the semantic desktop will help to at least keep the screen focused.
I love this idea of being able to recognize the person who's trying to telephone you or pick you up on Skype, because that's something that happens to me very often. Somebody phones and from the tone of their voice, I'm supposed to know exactly who they are, when the last time I spoke to them, what they're going to be asking me, and usually what I haven't actually managed to do for them, which I promised I would do since the last time we spoke.
Yeah.
Charles, perhaps I could bring you in here and talk a little bit about the connection, you know, why Dr. Hanschuch came to Malta and what the connection is and sort of the faculty's contribution, if any, to this or other projects.
Okay, so effectively our sort of interaction started via a student of ours who did his undergraduate with us, and then eventually went on to Derry to do his PhD under the guidance of Dr. Hanschuch here. And they were involved in this Nepomuk project, and they wanted to do a summer school. And somehow Simon, which is the guy I was referring to, told me about this, and we sort of got together, and we discussed whether it could be possible to do it here in Malta. And so that's the sort of the start of all this. Eventually, Sigi here became also my co-supervisor in my PhD. So the bond is sort of tidying up by time, so to say. Yeah, Nepomuk Summer School was quite an interesting event. It happened last September. I was pleased also to note a number of participation from our students, our undergraduate students, and some, I think, master students as well. It was a great experience because it allows students not just to see the technologies and experience the technologies that were being developed within Nepomuk, but also experience the social aspect behind all this. And that was quite rewarding for the students, well, obviously even for us within the department as well.
Yes, this is at the beginnings of their networking system.
Exactly.
Getting to know somebody like Dr. Hanshaw or his colleagues as well, and absolutely key to, especially in an area like yours,
yes,
which is changing practically on a daily basis. You have to keep up at the coalface, so to
speak,
exactly, to be able to keep going. And you were happy with the participation of the students as well, which is great.
Yes, the university helped in sort of sponsoring the students to attend. And yes, their performance was quite good. In fact, one of the students, because I have to explain this, I mean, at the end of the summer school, students had to group up and come up with a particular project, well, at least a sort of idea about a project. And one of our students actually made it to the final there were about four or five groups, I think, if mm-hmm. I remember correctly. Yeah. And one of our students was in a winning group, so to say. So we were quite pleased with that as well. Yeah, they managed quite well, and it was definitely a rewarding experience for them.
And where are we going to move on from here? I mean, you said this project, the Nepomuk project, has been completed.
Yes.
Up to now, but I presume, you know, you're not going to just leave it there. I presume it's going to either, like a phoenix, sort of rise from the ashes of the last meeting, or what?
Something very great happened in the project. That was we got the involvement of the open source community, you know. And you probably know about this Linux operating system. And we had one of the core, at least an important developer of KDE, which is the desktop of when you have a Linux machine, you can either have a KDE desktop or a GNOME desktop. In Europe, actually, most of the implementers are working for KDE, voluntarily open source based. And he brought the technology into Linux. So if you have a state-of-the-art Linux distribution, and you install it on your machine, even without you knowing it, you have semantic technology on your desktop. You have Nepomuk technology there, so which you can immediately start to use for indexing your files and for doing a semantic annotation of your files. And even after the project is over, these people still work on that. So there is a momentum happened. Also creates, get people in touch with that technology who never would have get in touch with that before, but also usually Linux user early adopters, so people who see the technology and like to extend it. So it's great. It's actually really happening there now, and it's out there in the market. You can install it on your machine, and it even creates a market for tools on top. So when Linux installations probably are in the millions at the moment, so it also makes sense to build applications on that.
But it's not, I mean, you're talking about open source, which is not obviously commercial. I mean, it's sort of like the opposite of developing something commercially.
Now, in a commercial area, open source tools are often used to build a product or to build a web service. Maybe we should not even think about products anymore, but more about what companies do nowadays. They sell your service, they do consulting for you. They give you a simple tool for free, but something more exciting and more elaborate could be built on top. So you could have a semantic desktop for free, but the enterprise research, something like a semantic SAP could be on top of that.
So there are commercial possibilities.
There are commercial possibilities. So this is infrastructure. You usually don't ask for money for the infrastructure, but you ask for services on top of that. And when we talk about the future, it doesn't necessarily have to be on the desktop, because on the long term, the forecast would be that we don't really have all the data on our computer anymore, but somewhere in the internet, what is called cloud computing. But the beauty of our project is that all our results would be valid also for the cloud computing. So all kind of ontologies which we have built and the architecture, it doesn't really matter if your personal data is on your desktop or on a server somewhere, but it's important for you to know how you could integrate them and interlink them and disseminate the data.
And crazy ideas for the future?
Crazy ideas for the future, yes, that would be semantic reality.
which is
the combination of semantic technology with sensor networks, which allows you all kind of intelligent infrastructure in the real world. So like, the fridge who would know that you're out of milk and already could order the milk for you in the supermarket.
Sounds like bliss.
even before you hit the road, the car could tell you that you rather should go this way than that way because there's a traffic jam. So basically all information which is already around there in the environment put into a semantic level that also allows new kind of intelligent services on top. That would be the future. Yes. Future's
part. Someone to do the shopping for me. Okay, well, our time has run out, I'm afraid. Thank you very, very much, Mike Brosner, Dr. Hanschur, and Charles Abela for coming to talk to me on Research Matters today.
My guests today were Mr. Michael Rosner, Dr. Charles Abela, and Dr. Siegfried Hanschur. I do hope that you'll be able to join us again next week for another edition of Research Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.